All right, Perek Yudalef, Pasuk Aleph. So we got like this. We just spoke about what happened with David and Avshalom itself, and Avshalom was kicked out, and was, as we said, he ran away twice, worried about what David HaMelech was going to do to him because he couldn't get over on Amnon's death. And now, Perek Yudalef, Pasuk Aleph, Yeda Yoav ben Tzruya ki lev HaMelech al Avshalom. Yoav ben Tzruya knew that the heart of the king was on Avshalom. He was torn. He was torn, meaning he mamish didn't know what to do with him. On the one hand, he said he killed his own brother. On the other hand, we know what Amnon did to his sister Tamar. We realize what had happened over there. And he wanted to punish Avshalom, but he didn't know how to go about it. The Radak says that Yoav was afraid to speak directly. If he spoke directly, he was afraid of what kind of effect that would have on David HaMelech himself. He was afraid, so he had to devise a roundabout method for going around right over here. Yeah.
This is also a sticky situation, because don't you have the concept of Ari Mukla, you have the family can
a goal Adam.
Right, so, but who's the family to do it?
I mean, Avshalom is not the murderer. So even, I don't think anybody could have killed Avshalom and said that's it. His servants maybe, right? But there's no one who can actually kill Avshalom for this, at least according to Halacha.
Even though he ordered it?
Even though he ordered it. We say, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomin. The people, whoever did it, his servants, should have said, no, we're not going to do this. Either way, we are a little bit confused when it came down, so there's definitely something over here. He was also worried about one other thing. He was worried about there being some type of revenge, right? Is there going to be revenge? He wasn't sure if David HaMelech was going to do this with some type of decision, so he didn't want to say anything directly because he wasn't sure if David HaMelech also, just like Avshalom had faked it and eventually killed his brother Amnon, maybe David HaMelech was going to do the exact same thing over here. It also makes it a little bit weird what Yoav does over here. Even though he tricks David HaMelech, you know, simply put, Rav Yaakov Blinder says, he asks this question, it's brought up in the art school over there. Why would Yoav care so much about Avshalom? What was the big deal that you get Avshalom back? Leave him by Talmai, the king of Geshur, by his grandfather. Is it that big of a deal to get him back into the kingdom? Does he think that Avshalom is going to be the next king of Klal Yisrael? Why did Yoav do this? So three answers. He says, number one, he knew the talents of Avshalom. Avshalom was a tremendously talented guy, and he was an asset to David's rule. So that's number one, keep him around because he's such an asset. Number two, he is a danger for David in the future if he's not here, because we don't know what his real plans are, and he's angry. Clearly, he had the ability to take out one of his brothers, right? Maybe he could do other things as well, right? And that's that. Or number three, he may have done it for himself. He had a crime of passion as well, like what he did by Avner. And he was hoping that if somehow I can bring Avshalom back, maybe David will forgive me for what I had done to Avner before. After all, Avshalom killed his brother because of what his brother did to his sister. Well, I killed Avner because of what he did to my brother. So maybe it would be for himself. So it was more of a self-serving, that type of idea, trying to get some sort of a kapara for that. Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa. So Yoav sent to Tekoa. Now, Tekoa was well known for its oil in that area. And oil, shemen zayis, the more shemen zayis you have, apparently, the person gets wiser. So he found, Vayikam Sham Isha Chachama, very wise woman, Vayomer Elah, and he said to her, He's ablina velushina bigde evil. So I want you to pretend to be a mourner and wear clothing of a mourner. Val Tasuchi Shem, don't anoint yourself with any oil. Vayisaki Isha Zeh, Yami Rabbi, you should be like this woman for many days, Misabelis Almes, mourning over someone who has died. Okay, so that's that. We already spoke about the olive trees and things like that, right? The Radak says the reason why he had to choose a wise woman is because he doesn't know how this is going to go. He's going to give her lines to say, and she's going to act out the part of what she's about to do. But there could be wrinkles in the program. You never know how David's going to take to this. And because of that, he said, I need you to be able to execute everything I tell you to do. And if you have to somehow do this in this time or whatever it is, I need you to be able to, to take it on your own and just say, like, if you need to...
Improvise.
You do it on your own. So that's why. Now, the reason why Tekoa specifically, not Jerusalem, is because you don't want anybody that David HaMelech might recognize. If somebody is going to recognize, that's a problem. Because David HaMelech will say, oh, I know this person. I know this person from before. I can't believe this person's there. You don't want anything like that to happen. And number two, he also sent a woman specifically. How are you, Paul? Are you joining us today? Okay, so he also sent a woman specifically, right, because he said he understood a woman would not be interrupted. A woman's not going to be interrupted. Everybody's going to be okay with that. Now, the avelus thing over here is David HaMelech had to think that she was mourning her husband for many, many days. And so she was not considered ever marrying again. And that would help convince him that the following story, he really meant it. And that's the type of a thing. We do learn a halacha of avelus from over here. From Yoav's instructions to the woman, put on mourner's clothing. It seems that a mourner cannot wear freshly laundered clothing. And refraining from anointing herself with oil means that a mourner cannot take a shower during her days of avelus, his or her. You go to the king and he'll speak to him. You'll speak to him these following words. And Yoav put the exact words inside. Now, it seems weird, but the Miamalei says it was a basic storyline. He gave her lines to say, but again, David is compassionate. I want you to bring out that compassion. If you feel the need to embellish, embellish. I'm trying to tell you the story. I'm trying to get David HaMelech to feel emotionally involved in this story. So the woman at Tekoi said to the king, Batipo Apal. She fell on her face, Arza, to the ground. Batishtachu, and she bowed down. Batomer Hoshi HaMelech. And she called out loud and said, Save me, O king. Save me, O king. Now here's the problem with this pasuk over here. The weird thing is, Batomer Ha'isha Tekoi. She said, what did she say? Doesn't say anything. Batipo Apal. Then she fell on her face. And then she said at the end, Hoshi HaMelech. What exactly was it over here that she said? So, number one...
She blanked that and forgot her lines.
Yeah, but what the Abar Ben El says, she was told what to say, and then she said what she wanted to say. She did her lines, right? But then she realized she had to improvise immediately, and she improvised immediately when it goes through. But it could be the Abar Ben El says it's an easy line. At first, she got up and said, May the king live a long life. So that's her first line, but we know we don't need to say that over here. And then she went down with her old thing over here. Maybe that's that. It could be also that she immediately bowed down because when she looked at the king had a glimmer of recognition that he knew who she was. So she immediately bowed down to the ground with her head to the ground, said she was not going to see how she looked. It could even be she's trying to be a mourner that's been mourning for a long time. That would be like whatever, and she looked super healthy. So she didn't want him to see her face when it came down over here. It could also be that she spoke to the guards, and then she spoke to the king. She told the guards what she wanted to say, and then afterward, she came to the king, and she actually said to the king itself. Another idea is that she shrieked, right? She screamed, and then she said, Save me, O king, and stuff like that. And the king said to her, Malach, what's with you? She said, Aval isha almana ani. I am but a widow. My husband has died. Right? I would have sent my husband, says the Mitsudos, but I couldn't because he's already passed away. Right? So that was the first part. She said, Aval isha manani, vayomas ishi. Okay, so that's that. Ulishivchaska, shnevanim. Your shivcha has two sons. Vayinatsu shnev basada, they both fought in the field. Ve'ematsu v'nam, there was nobody to save them between each other. Vayakoa echad is vachad vayomas oso. One had killed the other, and he, or hit him hard enough to be able to kill him. Okay. Now, it's possible the woman meant to tell David that she had these two sons from two separate husbands, and that the son who remained alive was from the second husband. She said the one struck the one, that each one was an echad. There was an echad from one husband and an echad from the other husband. They weren't really brothers. They were half-brothers, right? And that's that. Obviously, the allusion would be Amnon and Avshalom, who were brothers, but they weren't from the same mother. Right? Possibly that's what she was referring to over here. Now, obviously, the woman was suggesting that really they were both guilty. They got into a fight. They were fighting each other. If one wouldn't have killed the other would have killed him. That's obviously what's going to happen over here. And she's trying to say, just like Avshalom is to blame for killing Amnon, but Amnon is to blame for starting this in the first place. She's the one who took Tamar. There was guilt involved over here, even though Avshalom had done something really, really bad. Another thing, she was blaming David. There was no one around to stop their fight. Where were you, David? Where were you? You knew that Avshalom was angry at Amnon. You never punished Amnon publicly. No one ever knew what you did to Amnon. Maybe you did something privately to Amnon, like we talked about in the last parak. But nobody knew about it. Where was your rebuke? Why didn't you say anything? No one was around. And that's what he said. Nobody had separated them, right? She said, when you saw there was an ability to save somebody, you should have gotten involved and picked a side over here. Just standing on the sidelines and letting everything happen was 100% wrong. Pasuk Zayin. So now the entire family has come up upon your maidservant. Amru, and they said, Tinius Make Achiv, bring us the one who killed his brother. Unimiseu benefesh achiv, and we'll kill him for the soul of his brother, Asher Harag, that he had killed. Then Ashmita Gamas Yorish, and we'll destroy all of the other inheritors. The Chibo is Kachalti, they're going to extinguish my coals. Ashanish Ara, that all that remains, Levilti Simli Ishi Shemu Sheris Alpani Adama. That way my husband will no longer have a name or remembrance on the face of the ground itself. That's what's going to happen. If that son dies, I agree that my son is guilty of killing his brother. I agree with that. But at the end of the day, I'm going to have nothing left. What am I supposed to do when it came down to this over here? Now, it seems that she specifically said the words, Gamese Yorish, the only inheritor. She was saying, I'm a wealthy woman. My husband left me a lot of money. The reason why I think my family wants this kid dead is because if the kid is dead, they inherit me. But if the kid is alive, he inherits me. So that's the reason why they're doing this. They wanted money. They wanted to do something like that. And obviously, again, she was alone against her entire family asking for help. And so, too, this parallels Avshalom's situation. All of David's sons had turned against Avshalom and wanted him to die. Only David's intervention could save Avshalom at the very, very end. That's the idea behind it. But the main point over here was that there was a bias around over here. There's something right over here. The remaining coal is, simply put, she said, there's no warmth that I have. There's no light. The brightness in the house is my child, says the Abarbanel, based on the Radak. I'm losing out on something. I'm going to be a hapless widow. I'm going to have a cold and dark existence. I don't have any kids. I don't have any husband. I'm not going to get married again. What am I supposed to do? Leave me this one son, even though he murdered somebody. The king said to the woman, go to your house, I'll command concerning you, which really means I'm going to investigate. But obviously that's not good enough for this woman, because this woman doesn't want an investigation. Everybody will realize it's a total fake and it never happened. So the last thing she wants is an investigation. That's not what she wants. She said, okay, let's try to figure something out. Isha Tekoi Salamel. So the Isha Tekoi said to the king, Alai Adoni, right, Hamelech, Ha'avon, it's on me, this sin. On my father's house, Valmelech Kisonaki, may the king and his throne remain innocent in this case. Now that's a weird thing to say, isn't it? What's on her and her house? What is she trying to say to the king over here? What's she trying to do? Well, again, Rashi and the Radak say, she realized she had to press the king further. She had to hold David HaMelech responsible to make a decision. I need a decision right now. The way the Rashi and Radak said is, she didn't want to say this to David directly, but she's just like, you can't do this to me. If you put it on me, something bad is going to happen. My son is going to die. By the time you finish your investigation, my son's going to be killed, right? And then the blame is on the king. So she said very clearly, she's like, the king should be innocent, euphemistically, and it's my fault that everything had happened. Again, euphemistically, saying, how could I let that happen and you not say anything to me? My son is going to die. That's the idea behind it. So either way, the king could have very well said to her, right, and we don't know because there's missing lines over here, I'm not going to be in charge of this investigation. I'm going to have ministers in charge. I'll make sure nothing happens until they're finished. Nothing's going to happen up until there, and that's that. Of course, there is another way over here. I need more reassurance, she said. What if my son is killed? What else is going to happen over here? How am I going to get around this? The king said, those who say a word to you, bring them to me, he will never bother you again. So obviously from the woman's story, David HaMelech sensed that it wasn't just her son's life that was in danger, it was her life as well, that she was harboring a fugitive. So they were worried about what was going to happen. The family members would either kill the son or vent their anger on her. He therefore guaranteed the threatener, the guy who's threatening you, is never going to bother you again. Right? May I beg you, the king, to remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meharbas gol adam, restrain the gol adam l'shachis from destroying, v'leashmidu izbini, not to destroy my son. But I want you to do it. I don't want anybody else. I want you to do it. V'yomar chai Hashem, imi v'mesaros bin cha'arza, I swear that a hair will not go from your son down to the ground. Now that's better, right? All of a sudden he's swearing that nothing was going to happen to the son over here, right? That's that when it comes down to it. So again, the word over here is like this. There are a number of interpretations on how it actually goes through. There are five explanations. I beg you, you are compassionate. Remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compassionate and kind, and be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compassionate and kind. Remember how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made cities of refuge? Make for my son a city of refuge for him to run there. Remember, right, that you just took an oath by the name of God, you won't allow the son to be killed. Remember how Cain had killed Havel, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't kill Cain. Remember what God did over there? So too you should make sure over there. And remember when you were persecuted by Shaul HaMelech and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved you. If you were saved by God, you should save my son as well. That's the idea behind it. Try to make sure that everything's going to happen over here. We say, the woman argued that this wasn't a typical case of Goel Adam, right? If normally, by Goel Adam, you want to kill the murderer because the person whose son was just killed is so sad, they need something. They need to have their bloodlust. Said the mother, I'm the closest to the person who was killed. I'm the closest relative. And I'm saying I don't want a Goel Adam. I'm the Goel Adam, she said. But I don't want it to happen. Therefore, do not allow anyone else to pretend to be the Goel Adam when I don't want such a thing to happen. Pasuk Yud Beis. Then the woman said, I beg you, let your maidservant say one more thing to the king. And he said, speak. Why have you thought such a thing about the people of God? What's more, you speak about this matter as one who is guilty, because the king hasn't brought back the one that he banished far, far away. So obviously, she's explaining the allegory over here. She looked at David HaMelech and like, do you really think this happened? Do you really think that one of my sons killed the other? And that Klal Yisrael is getting up to kill the son. You think they're that bloodthirsty? That they're that crazy that they just want to kill and kill and kill and kill? Didn't you realize this is all a mushel? Everything here was a parable the entire time? How could you not have realized such a thing when it came down over here? And that, the banishment that she was referring to Avshalom, she said, you banished him. You threw him away from the family. He's away from everything. Don't you realize there, Kimos Namus, we're all going to die. The Kamayim and Igarim Arza were like water poured out on the ground. Asher lo yasefu, it will never be gathered back again. The Luyis Elohim Nefesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not favor any soul over the other. Chosha Machshavos, the Vilti Yidach Mimenu Nidach. Therefore, the king should have a plan that no one gets completely lost. Even if Avshalom did something wrong, you should always be able to bring him back. This is also really crazy reasons. Four reasons are given by the woman, says the Abarbanel, as to why David should forgive Avshalom. Number one, everybody dies anyway. So why kill a person who's going to die anyway? Avshalom's going to get his comeuppance, whether it's in this world or the next. Why would you kill Avshalom if eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of that for you? That's number one. Number two, just like water is impossible to collect afterward, how are you going to resurrect the one who was murdered? Amnon was killed. Is it going to help by killing Avshalom? Is that going to help at all? By killing Avshalom, is that going to make you feel any better? It's really true by almost anything. When you hear, I just want justice, I just want revenge for that would happen. What does that help? You're going to feel better about that? Is that really going to make you feel better? I think we've all had that situation in grade school where like the guy hurt you or the guy punched you or the guy said something to you and you just have to get that last line in to be able to get down. But that's a kid's reaction. That's not there. Number three, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not favor any soul. He did technically have an issue. There was no absolute guilt on Avshalom's part. Why was there no guilt on Avshalom's part? Because again, he sent his avadim to do it for him. He didn't kill Amnon. His servants did it instead of him. That's number one. Number two, even then, we don't kill unless there's azhara. There's some type of hasra, a warning beforehand. Did anybody warn Avshalom? Did anybody say anything to Avshalom? Okay,
that's number three. Why does that make a difference that he sent someone to kill as opposed to him killing him?
What we say is divra rava, divra talmud, divra meshomen. If you have a rabbi, a master, and a student saying something, Hashem said, don't kill. And you have a student, Avshalom, telling his servant, go ahead and kill him. They can't listen to Avshalom. They have to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's not Avshalom's blame. In Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can take Avshalom's task for it,
but he didn't actually kill. How about this? What if he paid them to do it? He's an accomplice.
Even so. You might be an accomplice, and in Shemayim, you're blamed for that. But an accomplice to murder does not get killed in the eyes of the Torah. And therefore, she said, he's not Chayiv Misa. You want to say, God can do whatever he wants, but but you cannot kill him. That's extrajudicial stuff, and that's something that you said should not happen right here.
So then why
do we
even talk about an Urim Miklat in the first place then? I don't understand.
Of the Urim Miklat? Because remember, there are people, what mean by the kids? When yeah, she like, was talking about her kids?
Well, and just in general, like we that there's an Urim Miklat, a person who accidentally kills someone.
Yeah.
There's a city of refuge.
Because there is a concept of a Goel Adam. And the Goel Adam is that it's a reshus, or maybe even a mitzvah, to kill the one who murdered your relative. There is such a thing in the Goel Adam, and therefore you need an Urim Miklat to take away from that. But obviously, if anybody tells you, right, should you become a Goel Adam, I don't think anybody's going to say, yeah, be a murderer. Take your gun, practice in real life, right? That's not a good idea for anybody, right? And that's that. And then finally, right, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that it becomes, you know, there's a means in which it became impossible to bring a murderer to justice, so that Goel Adam, that Urim Miklat, supposedly is there, certainly the king should have a means, an end, somewhere to be able to get out of it, and that should be that. So look what happens. Pasuk Tezvav. Va'ato, asher basu l'dabar l'melech aduni yaseh devar hazeh. I came to speak to my master, the king, about this matter. Ki yiruni ya'am, because I was frightened by the people. V'tomer shiv choscha, and your servant, maidservant, said, adabar l'melech, I'll speak to the king. Ula yaseh melech es devar amaso. Maybe the word of the king, you know, my words will make sense to the king. The king will listen to deliver his maidservant from the hand of the person who's going to uproot me. From the inheritance of the Lord itself. So this is why she said, this is why I took it in allegory. I was frightened by the people. They told me not to speak to the king, that I shouldn't say anything to you, and that's why I composed this tale. I wanted to make sure that you understood who I was referring to in such a way as a mushel, right? But I did it on purpose because people warned me this is not a good idea. And your maidservant said, right? May the word of my master be a reassurance. My master is like a malach of God. You hear good and evil. May God be with you in everything that you do. Now, we said the reason why he's compared like a malach is because we talked about this before. David HaMelech had destroyed his Yetzer Hara. This could be after a few years of working on his Yetzer Hara because Batsheva had happened years earlier. He had worked on himself. By this point, he was no longer as a regular human being. He's doing tshuva all day. He's crying. He's fasting. He's composing the Tehillim, saying Tehillim all day. We're not talking about a regular person. So she's saying, you're not a normal person. And that's that. Vayan HaMelech. So the king finally speaks up. And he said to the woman, I don't want you to lie. Don't deny anything I'm about to ask you. Do you promise to tell me the absolute truth? Please speak, my master the king. Tell me, what do you need to tell me? And the king said, was Yoav with you with all this? Was Yoav with you over here? The woman got up and she said, by your life, my master the king, right? It's not possible to turn to the right or the left, right? From everything the king says, yes, your servant Yoav commanded me. He put in the mouth of your maidservant everything right over there. It says, interesting right over here, right? The woman was clearly a wise woman. David asked her if she would answer his question, right? Would she conceal nothing? Her natural response should have been to say yes, but she didn't. She didn't say yes. She said, Yedaber na Aduni HaMelech. Do you know what I'm saying? You promised to tell me the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you, Lord. And she said, speak. She didn't answer. She didn't say it. And then she realized the best thing would be to say, yes, it was Yoav. And whatever it's like that, right, that's the idea behind it. But this is absolutely unbelievable. As soon, it seems something interesting. How did David HaMelech figure this out? Well, it's kind of obvious. After she got what she came for, immediately she started rebuking David HaMelech. She clearly had an agenda. Normal people don't do this. So what in the world was up with it? So we realized Yoav kind of has been hinting about Avshalom for years, you know, for the past couple of years. There's something else going on. So you realize Yoav must be behind it. Pasuk Chaf. Levavur sabevis p'nei davar asa avdecha Yoav etzedavarza. Your servant Yoav did this in order to gradually come around to the main issue. V'adoni chacham kechachamas malach ha'okim. My master is as wise as one of the malachim of God. L'das v'kol shavarts. To know everything going on in the land. V'yomar malach ha'Yoav. So the king called over Yoav. He was done with the woman. Done. And we don't meet this woman ever again. Who was she? We have no idea. There is no official word of who she was. Normally you get to this, you're like, oh, it's Serach Bas Asher. Yeah, but we don't have that. We have no idea who the Isha Tekoist was. The king said, okay, I did this matter. If you look at the word Assisi, do you have it down there over there? Is it written? Oh, it's not. It must be a different Masoda. Asisa.
Here's Assisi, but here over here it says Asisa.
Oh, yeah, it says it like that? Do you have it like that also?
No.
That's so weird.
No, it's on the side.
That's so weird. Yeah, it must be in some and not the others. Anyway, Assisi, but it really says Assisi. As a devar, you did this thing. The Lecha Shev is an Arus of Shalom. All right, bring the Nar of Shalom back. Bring him back. By the way, he's not just now. He's like 40 years old at this time. But bring him back. Vayipol Yoav upon Avarta. Yoav fell to his face to the ground. Vayishtachu, he bowed down. Vayivarach Zemelech, and he blessed the king. Vayimor Yoav. Hayom yoda adachim atzatzachim v'enech adoni amelech. And now I know that I found favor in your eyes, my master the king. Sha'asa melech is dvar avdecha. Because you did the word of your servant right over here. Okay. Now, the word asis. David said to Yoav, you've already done it. Asisa is you have done it. He said, asisi, right, is I will allow it to be done. You started it, go finish it. You want Avshalom back, go bring Avshalom back. For whatever reason you think is best for that. Vayakam Yoav, this is in Pasuk of Gimel. Vayel Geshur, you went to Geshur. Vayav is Avshalom Yerushalayim, you brought Avshalom back to Yerushalayim. Vayomer Melech, Yisov al Beso, turn him to his house. I don't want to see him. Panei lo yireh, I'm not going to see his face. Vayisov Avshalom al Beso, upenei melech lo ra'a. He turned back to his house. He did not see the face of the king. Now, Avshalom was ordered to take a roundabout route so that people didn't know he was there. It would slowly but surely come in. He didn't want to think. He didn't want people to think that bringing Avshalom back meant he pardoned him. Everybody knew that he publicly had killed his brother. He didn't want this to be like a pardon. So he said, I don't want him to see my face. I want people to know that I'm still angry. And Pasuk Chaf Hey, Avshalom lo haya ish yafeh b'chol Yisrael. Like Avshalom, there was no man more beautiful in all of Bnei Yisrael. Lahalel ma'od. He was worthy of praise. Mikaf raglov ad kakado. From the foot, the bottom of his foot, up until his skull. Lohaya bomum. There was not a single blemish with him. The reason why we're mentioning this is because he was the most worthy for the soul, for the throne itself. Now, this is something interesting about Avshalom. In describing the beauty, this was an extremely hard test for David HaMelech. David HaMelech loved Avshalom. He loved him as one of his oldest sons, and a son that he knew was a tremendous koach. Just like Yoav realized that this man had tremendous powers, he knew that this is true over here. And by nature, a father delights in seeing his son and grandchildren, even more so when they're pleasing to the eye, right? That's the idea. Even so, David did not give in. He wouldn't see Avshalom. He wouldn't look at Avshalom. He wouldn't hear from Avshalom. He wanted to have absolutely nothing to do with it. Or it's a lead in to the next chapter. Look what happens. Pasuk Vav. Begalchos Rosho. He would shave his head. Every year he would shave it because it became heavy on him. And he would shave it that way because he was a Nazir Olam, which we'll talk about in a second. Veshakos Arosho Masayim Shkalim Be'Evin HaMelech. He would weigh the hair of his head for 200 shekels by the king's weight. Just want you to remember, shekel is a weight. How heavy is hair?
Not that heavy.
I mean, how heavy is your hair, Dave? The longest ear, right? How heavy is hair? Pick up a shetel. Is a shetel heavy? Shetel's not heavy. What in the world? His hair weighed 200 shekel. 200 shekel. That's a weight. That's a regular weight. Think of picking up like a heavier coin, 200 of them. And that's the weight of the hair itself. We have no idea what that means, what kind of hair it was. And it seems like it's absolutely pshat. Now, there are many different nazirim. We know that the regular nazir is a nazir for 30 days, right? It's 30 days and that's that. After the 30 days, you bring your korbanos, if you're tummy, you start it over again, etc. We know about a Nazir Shimshon because we saw Shimshon before. Nazir Shimshon is somebody who never shaves his head, ever. He's a Nazir from the womb, stays that way the rest of his life, and that's that. Then we have a Nazir Olam. A Nazir Olam would be, for example, Shmuel HaNavi. You don't think of Shmuel HaNavi this way. You think of Shmuel HaNavi with like nice shaved head. But Shmuel HaNavi did not have a shaved head. Shmuel HaNavi was a Nazir Olam who got a haircut once a year. Right? Dreads, I guess. Maybe he had dreads. But Nazir, he was a Nazir Olam his entire life. And just like that, Avshalom was the exact same way. He had extremely heavy hair. The difference is, well, the difference is over here, he spent hours and hours and hours on his hair. Avshalom had extremely beautiful hair, and he made sure that people knew. So Fabio, is that the guy? I forgot what the guy's name is. Fabio? Like, something like that. Like, this long, luxurious hair. Now, I don't know if he looked like David Melech and he had red hair, or if he was a blondie, or brown, black hair. I have absolutely no idea. But he was a Nazir Olam, right, who cut his hair once a year. Some say it was once a week, but it seems hard that his hair would have grown that big once a week. I mean, most of us get our hair. I'm sorry?
And a lot of product in his hair.
A lot of product. Maybe that was. Maybe that's what it actually happened over here. Now, the question is, why did he do it? So the Abarbanel says he did not do it for religious reasons. He did it because he was a darn good-looking guy. And he wanted his hair to be luxurious and huge and whatever it was. It was not L'shem Shemayim. Shimon HaTzadik, who saw that Nazir in Nazir Daf Gimel, or Shmuel HaNavi, they were doing it for the right reasons. The Maral explains, so simple, hair is extravagancy. It's something that's not necessary. It's something that's extra for the person. Avshalom was into excess. So the reason why the Pasuk describes him as a Nazir Olam, that he had long hair, is because that's who Avshalom was. He was into the rich life, the wealthy life. Even when he ran away from David, he's not hiding in caves like David did. He ran away to the king of Geshur. He ran to the king's palace and said, I need to be here, and that's that.
It doesn't explain why he shaves his head.
Why he
shaves it.
No, Nazir Olam, I didn't say he shaves it. He cuts it. But not completely. Not like shaves it off like that all the way.
That's what I thought you were saying.
No. Meaning he would cut it like once a year, just the way, whatever it was. But he did it. And this is so strange. We're talking about a grown man with children. That's who Avshalom was. A grown man with children. And yet he still cares so much about what adolescents really care about. That's an interesting thing. Now, the 200 shekels, it could be that he donated this money to the Beis HaMikdash, or he wanted to show everybody how awesome he was. Chazanish says it was 4 pounds. 4 pounds doesn't sound like a lot. It's a lot when it comes to hair. I still cannot imagine that it was 4 pounds right over there. The Medrash says Avram was one of six who were complete in their beauty. Adam Rishon, Yaakov Avinu, Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Avohu, and Avshalom. Those were the six most beautiful people. Okay. Vayivodul Avshalom Shlosh Banim Vasachas. He had 3 sons, 1 daughter. Shema Tamar. His daughter's name was Tamar. He always said, Ishia Fasmare. She was a very beautiful girl. So interesting. We don't mention her ever again. Why did we need to know that she was an Ishia Fasmare? We literally do not mention her ever again in all of Tanakh. Very, very, very strange. Now, the Malbim says the reason why Avshalom got so angry in the next couple of psukim is because his kids all died. David HaMelech didn't come to be Menachem Avil. He didn't come to be Menachem Avil during that time, and he didn't pardon him even then. And that's what got Avshalom so really, really, really upset. It could be this is one of the reasons why he wanted to usurp the throne. When he had kids, he lived with his kids. He was fine with his kids. Everything was happy, and he's perfectly fine. He had a namesake whenever everything was all good. However, the Malbim says, as soon as his kids died, he was mamish like, he was could not deal with anything. And he's like, I've got to do something else. I've got to do something else. And that's why you want to take over. He lived there for 2 years. He still had not seen the face of the king. Avshalom sent a message to Yoav to send another message to the king. Yoav's like, dude, I did my job. Okay, I brought you back to Yerushalayim. I'm not doing anything more than this. He sent a second message. Well, Yoav didn't want to come. But he said to his avadim, Ru chalkas Yoav al yadi. I want you to see that Yoav's portion, his field, is right near mine. Lo shum seorim. He has barley there. Go burn it on fire. The avadim of Avshalom, they burned it on fire. You notice, by the way, Avshalom doesn't get his hands dirty. He sends his avadim to do the bad deeds, right? He doesn't do it himself.
My boss.
I'm sorry?
My boss.
It does sound like that, right? He had the air of a monarch. He figured, like, oh, you could do whatever I want. If I want to take somebody down, I can take somebody down. But Yaakov Yoav Yoav Avshalom Abaisa. Yoav got up. He went to Avshalom to the house. Vayomer Elav, and he said to him, dude, that's all he needs to say, right? Vayomer Elav, and he said to him, Lama Yitzisu Avadecha Sachel Kashel Va'esh. Why in the world would your servants have set my portion of field on fire? What's going on here? What in the world is going on? So again, this may be why Yoav wanted him here in the first place. He wanted to keep an eye on him, right? Keep your enemy, your friends closer, your enemies closer. He knew he was too ambitious. He knew that he was too menacing to be a king itself, right? He said, I don't understand. What do I have to do with this, said Yoav? What did I do wrong? I told you to come here. And I sent you to the king. And now I'm going to send you to the king saying, why'd I come from Geshur? It was better for me over there. I want to see the king's face. If I'm guilty of any sins, put me to death. And that's that. So the Mari Kara explains the following. He said, in Geshur, people wouldn't kill him because they were afraid of David. But now, they see that David doesn't really care. So my brothers might come after me. They see that you don't care about me. If you don't care about me, then that's that. Number two, I lived with kings over there, not over here. What's the difference over here? How am I supposed to be? Now, this is a massive shortcoming in Yoav, in Avshalom, I'm sorry. He doesn't even have a karas atov to Yoav for bringing him back. All he does is burns down his field and said, you haven't done enough. The Yoav came to the king and told him. He called out to Avshalom and he came to the king. And he bowed down to his face to the ground in front of the king. And David HaMelech kissed Avshalom. So apparently, he was moved by his son preferring death to a life separated from his father. And maybe that was just a clever trick to be able to get himself back. Okay, Parak Tesvav. Vayim Achrei Chenev was after Vayasal Avshalom Merkav V'susim V'chamishim Yishratzim L'fanav. Avshalom made for himself a chariot and horses and 50 men running in front of him, okay? The Rabag says so many horses for a hedyot is totally abnormal. He's trying to raise his dignity, make people think that he's going to be the next in line to become king. And the truth is, he was. The first in line to become king was Amnon. Amnon's dead. Avshalom is the second to oldest. Now, that's not exactly true. There was Kilov, right? Kilov was the second to oldest. But Kilov never wanted to become king. Right. So now we're left with Avshalom. But Hishkim Avshalom. Avshalom got up. V'amnal Yad Derech Hashar. He stood by the gate. V'yikola Isher Yelo Riv. Anybody who had a fight, Levola Melchon Mishpat, they came to the king to be judged. V'yikola Avshalom. Elov Avshalom would call to him. V'yomar Ezeh Yirato. Hey, what city are you from? V'yomar Yachar Shifti Yisrael Decha. Oh, your servant, he's from this area right over here. He made a point of rising up early, going to a public place where everybody was going to notice him. He went to them. And he told them, from which city are you? He showed that, did the courts ask you where you were from? No. They obviously didn't care about you. I care about you. I like you. I think you're a great guy, right? He said, that's sad. Why did you have to leave your city to come here? They should have gone to you. Did you know that Shmuel and Avi used to go to the people? Why is David making you come over here? Could be that it really did start L'Shem Shemayim, but then it started going down. We don't know. We don't know if Avshalom really meant this L'Shem Shemayim or he just did it on his own. Yomel Avshalom, wow, your words are so good. They're so correct. But you know what? The king's never going to listen to you. Sorry, the king's never going to listen right over there. Now, halakhically, you are never allowed to side with one of the judges and go out of court and be like, oh yeah, I held like that guy, right? And say, but that guy, the other judge didn't agree with me. Anything like that. You can't do it. Avshalom did this all the time. And that's that. His point was, he wanted to see as a flaw in David HaMelech's ability to judge. You know how David HaMelech used to, we've talked about, he did Mishpat Utsudaka. He judged people, and if they couldn't afford the ruling,
he paid for it
and made sure it goes. Avshalom saw that as a flaw. He's like, David HaMelech isn't even sure he's right or not. So he feels bad, so he just pays the people. So, because he thinks he's actually wrong. So you could have been right, but David was wrong and he just paid for it instead. And he pointed out as a flaw. What were you going to say, Aaron?
Well, it was the whole issue with saying that the judge was...
That judge said that way.
It was after the psak.
Because it sounds like the guy was just trying to get out of it and be like, oh yeah, it was him, it wasn't me, right? That's not right. You don't tell people what happened in the inner sanctum of what happens in courts. You don't do that. Who would make me judge in the land? Every man who has a fight and a problem that would come to me, and it would make him righteous. If only I were appointed judge in the land, everything would be okay. Says in Pasuk Hay, whenever a man came close to bow to him, he would reach out to take a hold of him, and he would kiss him. That's what Avshalom would do. Yes, Avshalom could ever tell the whole Israel did to every Jew. Shavu'ul Mishpat Lamelech, to everyone who came to be judged by the king. By Ganev Avshalom was Levan Sheisrael, and he stole the hearts of all the men in Israel over there. It sounded like he was trying to treat him as a brother. It's like when the guy would bow down to him, he would lift up his hand and be like, "No, no, 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 get up, right? But of course, Avshalom loved it. Loved it. All these people bowing down to him. He was there purely for the honor. Pasuk Zayin, Vayimi Ketzar Boim Shana, at the end of 40 years. Vayomer Avshalom Amach, Elchon Nava, Avshalom is Nidri Asher Netati L'Hashem B'Chavron. So he said to the king, I want to go and fulfill my vow that I had made to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Chavron itself. I want to go to Chavron itself. What are the 40 years over here? So it could be 40 years from when the people first asked for a king. That would make, right now, David HaMelech had ruled for 37 years by this point, right? He was 30 when he first became king, so that makes him 77 at the time. 67. How old was David when he died? 70. So he had three more years. He was 77 years old at the time of the uprising, and that's that. Some say 40 years had passed refers to the termination of when David's going to be king. He's supposed to be 70 years. Avshalom knew that the time period of 40 was almost up. So he knew also that Shlomo was supposed to become king. So he knew, I have to do it now before David HaMelech dies. If David HaMelech dies, then Shlomo HaMelech is going to automatically become king because he told everybody that. But if I do it now, before that happens, then everything's going to be different. Maybe I'll be able to take it away from him and it's going to be that way. The Barbanel says Avshalom was 40 years old. He felt that he reached a level of understanding that other people hadn't gotten to, and therefore it's time for me to be able to go through. There's no question, though, if he calculated years, he miscalculated completely. Now, what does it mean by Chevron over here? He felt that there was a reason to bring a Bama in Chevron. If you'll remember, there was no official Mishkan yet. There was no official Beis HaMikdash yet. They hadn't built up anything, and therefore you could bring Bamas wherever you want to. He wanted to go to Chevron as a holy place to be able to go through. Now, the real reason he wanted to go to Chevron? Because that's where kings become kings, right? That's why he wanted to go there. But he faked it and said, no, it's for other reasons. Ki neder nadar avdecha b'shivti b'gshur. Your servant took a vow when he was in Geshur, Ba'aram, Lamor, and he said, "Im Yashuv Yeshivini Hashem Yerushalayim, if Hashem brings me back to Yerushalayim, Ba'avadzi Yas Hashem, then I will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu." Avshalom wanted to convince David HaMelech of his piety, his chassidus. He didn't want him to think that he had, you know, strayed after the Geshurim when he was in Geshur itself. He said, "I made a vow to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that would offer a sacrifice for spilling my brother's blood." Chevron is one of the cities of refuge. It's in Ir Miklat. Remember, we talked about Ir Miklat before. I want to go to Chevron as a kapara for the murder that I did, that I caused. That's what he said. Go in peace. And he got up and he went to Chevron. Interesting. The Marsha says there's a difference between Lech Bishalom and Lech Lishalom. Lech Lishalom means go for peace. Go for peaceful reasons and everything will be okay. Lech Bishalom, go in peace. Your going should be in peace, but you're never going to come back. Because he said that, unfortunately, Lech Bishalom is known as almost like a curse. You say that to the dead. When somebody dies, you don't say it to somebody who's alive. Yeah, sort of like that. Pasuk Yud. Vayishlach Avshalom Meraglim B'chushit Yisrael, sent out spies to all the Shifti Yisrael. Lamor saying, Kishom Acham is Kola Shofar. When you hear the noise of the shofar, V'amartam Melech Avshalom B'chavron, then you'll know Avshalom became king in Chevron. Now, the first stage of the revolt were already starting. They were going to proclaim him as king itself. Originally, it could be that Avshalom only wanted to become king in Chevron. And that's why it says, Malach Avshalom b'Chevron. Maybe he only wanted to be there and allow David to stay wherever it was. It was Achitophel who later told Avshalom, not a good idea. You got to go to Yerushalayim. And therefore, Avshalom wanted to have a separate kingdom, to which he was told, don't do that. That's not going to work. You don't want David to have one kingdom, you to have another. It's never going to work. Take over David's kingdom. As Avshalom, Holcham, Asayim, Yishmi, Yishalayim. Together with Avshalom were 200 men from Yishalayim, crewing. They were invited. The Holcham, Musumam, they were going innocently. Lo Yadu Kol Davar. They had absolutely no idea what was going on over here. Every single one of these 200 people were prominent individuals that everybody held of. Their presence would be seem like backing for such a king, and therefore it would win the support of all the common men. One of the people that came was obviously Achitophel. Not only is this going to take away the counsel of Achitophel for David HaMelech, because David HaMelech used to go to him for all his advice. Not only is that going to do, but also we'd also give Avshalom a chance to win Achitophel over to his side. He was talking to the people all the time, and he had a golden tongue, and he went in and whatever and stuff like that. Now, when he got the 200 people, it was funny. He went to 200, you know, to a bunch of people and said, I want you to come with me. They said, no, we're not coming with you. Like, why are we going to Chevron? And he told them, he said, David HaMelech, he went back to David HaMelech and he's like, David, people don't want to come with me. Abba, people don't want to come with me. Can you sign a letter that says, you too right? You too, I'm sending with Avshalom to Hebron. So he brought that to 100 pairs of people. You too, you too, you too, you too, right? And he went to all of them and convinced, David Melech had no idea what was happening. All the people didn't know what was happening over here. Then everybody thought, well, if they're going, it must be that we're okay with going. And if they're holding of it, well, it must be over there. But we have no idea what originally happened with Achitofel. We don't know if he came because of a conspiracy, because he was mad about what happened with Bathsheba. If he mamish came on his own, we have absolutely no idea. Maybe he had that nevuah already that he knew he was going to be there. Some say that he invited all the members of Sanhedrin as well. Plus a good base. Avshalom sent to bring Achitofel, the Giloni, David's advisor from his city from Gilo, where he offered all of the sacrifices. The conspiracy then became very powerful. The number of people that were with Avshalom continued to increase. They got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. They were certainly aware of the Nevuah that they told over to Nasan and Avi that somebody was going to rebel against him. They also knew that Shlomo Melech was supposed to become king. They probably knew that Shlomo Melech was 9 years old. They didn't want him as a king. So everybody says right over here, it seems that it became worse and worse and worse as time went on, and there became a lot of backing behind it. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Yavol Magid El David, a teller, a messenger, came over to David Lamor saying, Hayalev Ish Yisroach Rei Avshalom, the hearts of Bnei Yisrael after Avshalom. Vayomer David L'chol Avadav, and David said to all of his servants, Asher Itov Yerushalayim, they were with him in Yerushalayim, Kumu V'nivracha, let's get up and run. Kilosiyav Lanu Pleito V'nei Avshalom, we're not going to escape from Avshalom. Marula Vaches, let's quickly go. Penyamar V'siganu, maybe he's going to hurriedly overtake us. V'idiach Alenu Azara, and then he's going to thrust evil upon us, and kill people by the sword in the city itself. David HaMelech immediately understood what his son was capable of doing to him, and decided that his only recourse was to flee. He also understood he was going to have mercy on Avshalom no matter what. There's no way he's going to be able to kill Avshalom. So he said, why should I allow innocent people in Yerushalayim to die? Because the city's going to fight for me. Right? Why would I allow that to happen? Who knows? Maybe Avshalom has people inside the city. There's going to be civil war inside the city itself. There's going to be a fierce battle between brothers that's going to ensue, that's going to be bloody, destructive, and it's not going to work. David HaMelech said, I don't want this to happen. So we tried getting everybody away right over here. The wording that he gave of nidach, right? Hidiach alenu asara is like an ir nidachas. By ir nidachas, there are many innocent people that are killed because they're convinced to do avodah zarah. He said, I'm worried about that. He's also worried. The accusation, the reason why this is happening is because of Bathsheba. He knew that. He didn't want to be in the same area where he had sinned with Bathsheba. If he was in the same area, he thought that kateger, that accusation, would be there for him, and he wouldn't do. The one thing is, you notice this from David, there's no worries. He accepts God's suffering as if, okay, I understand, this is what I have to do at this point. It's unbelievable, yeah.
It actually makes no sense. Why not? Fine, if he wants to decide that, what he's going to do is what he's going to do, but why not consult the Kohen Gadol and the Rumatumim? Should I go or should I stay?
So that's an interesting point. If you'll remember, he stopped using the Urim and Tumim quite a while ago. And it could be that by this time, he couldn't get to the Urim and Tumim in time with Avshalom coming in the way. So although normally he'd have the Kohen Gadol and he'd ask him immediately, what am I supposed to do in this case? The Kohen Gadol may not have been in the city. Remember, there's no Beis HaMikdash. So he might not have been around there, and he has to make a split-second decision. No Urim V'Tumim available. What are you going to do in this case? But we will see the Kohanim do come, and he does ask a question of the Urim V'Tumim eventually, but not yet.
Why would he believe that the whole of the nation is behind Avshalom all of a sudden?
He must have gotten the messages. And maybe there were mixed messages. Maybe people were saying, oh, we think it's like this. But he must have gotten messages that things were bad. They decided to go. And this is what happened. The servants of the king said to the king, we are your servants. Whatever you want to do, let's do. Him and all of his house went by foot. They didn't want to draw attention to themselves, so they did not ride horses, but they left immediately. Yuma Ayin Zayman Aleph says, they did not go by carriages, they didn't take anything else, they went by foot. And then he left 10 of his pilakshim, the concubines, to watch over the house to make sure that everything would be taken care of. As he ran out, he composed Tehillim Perek Gimel. Right, the Vorchum Ibn Avshalom Beno, when he was running away right over here. Could be he went on foot to fool the spies. Avshalom had spies around. He didn't want him to think that he was running away because he would catch him on the way there. So therefore, he went by foot. No one would suspect that he was actually leaving right over there. The kasha is, Nasan and Avi's Nevuah said, somebody's going to come up from your house and take your wives. Why in the world would he leave them behind?
Palakshin?
So I think his svara was, there's no way that Avshalom's going to do this. There's no way it's going to happen. And he left his Palakshin, not his wives, but he left his Palakshin. They're saying, you'll watch over the house, everything will be okay. I can't imagine anything that's going to happen. He couldn't imagine Avshalom doing something evil with the concubines of his father. And therefore, Imamish thought there's no way that's going to happen. Achitofel told him to do something different. But I'm thinking that that's the reason why it happened over here. But yes, obviously something was terribly wrong with what happened over here. All right, we're going to stop with this one. Pasuk Yud Zayin. We'll stop right there.